most people are familiar with the placebo effect, the idea that a pill or treatment with no medicinal ingredient can help someone if they believe it can, that the idea of treatment can be as important as treatment itself. The research on placebos goes back to 1978, when researchers found some dental patients got as much relief from a placebo pill as others did from a narcotic. But the history is longer, as we'll hear, and now there's new evidence that maybe there's more than something psychological going on. Some people may actually have a gene or a series of genes that makes them more likely to be helped by a placebo. And it gets more interesting. This might happen even when the patients know it's a placebo, although researchers haven't figured out why that may be true. The research on the genetic connection is published in the journal Trends in Molecular Medicine. Dr. Catherine Hall is a research fellow at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center in Boston and lead author on the study. She joins us in the studio. Welcome, Dr. Hall.
Thank you.
And let's, before we start talking about your research, just a little bit more about the placebo effect. It's not just about being handed a sugar pill that has nothing in it.
A placebo is all the elements of a clinical encounter that don't include the active intervention. So the physician, how they look, what's in their office, their white coat, their stethoscope, whether or not they touch you, how friendly they are, the degrees on the wall, all of these factors can really modify a person's expectation and can have a big effect on treatment.
And so how can somebody feeling good about, you know, the way they're being treated, as you said, because they like the doctor or they like the plaque on the wall or they're told that a pill is going to help them, how is it that them thinking that does make them better?
There is evidence that when people are expecting to get some relief from a treatment, that dopamine in their brain is activated. But beyond that, if you think about it, words have tremendous power. So if somebody comes in and is angry, your heart rate goes up. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, the translation of a word or a context to a feeling, which is a physiological process.
So take us a little bit further back. There were doctors that used this decades ago.
Literally for centuries, healers and physicians have known that they can treat certain ailments, especially ailments that there's no known treatment for, with bread pills. Even in the 1800s and 1700s, physicians would give difficult patients or people who had chronic conditions or even people who were dying, they would give them a placebo pill, and oftentimes they would have relief.
And then there was Franz Mesmer, who actually mesmerized people. There's no other word for it. A commission was formed. Benjamin Franklin was on it.
Well, it was Louis the 16th, who in 1784 was concerned about the power of Franz Mesmer, who was, you know, depending on who you talk to, a healer or a charlatan. But he developed what he called animal magnetism, and he would go around and treat mostly women with his animal magnetism. And the traditional medical establishment was concerned that he was usurping their power. And so Louis the 16th convened a commission, which involved many famous scientists, Benjamin Franklin, Antoine Lavoisier, and essentially created sham treatments. So they would mesmerize an object and then have an object that wasn't mesmerized, and the patient wouldn't know whether or not it was mesmerized. And they would find that they had the same effect whether or not it was a real mesmerization or a fake or sham mesmerization.
Just the fact that they were told that there was something special about this thing and
right.
It could help them.
Right.
And they believed that. So bring us now to this idea. It has been proven that there are people who can respond to a placebo effect. Bring us up to your research that some people are more likely to respond, that there's some genetic connection.
So when we were reviewing the literature and we saw that people with high dopamine levels tended to be more likely to be placebo responders, what we did was we looked for a genetic variation that was associated with dopamine levels. And we used a study in irritable bowel syndrome in which people got various levels of placebo treatment. They were put on a wait list. They were given sham acupuncture. Or they were given sham acupuncture plus a warm, caring patient-doctor interaction. And what we saw in that study was that the people that got the sham acupuncture did a lot better than the people who were on the wait list. And the people who got the sham acupuncture plus the warm, caring practitioner, they did the best. We thought this was an excellent study because it titrated, if you will, the placebo response. And we wanted to see if there was a genetic association with that. And we chose a polymorphism or a gene variation, which we'll call COMT. It stands for catechol-O-methyltransferase.
Let's call it COMT.
Let's call it COMT. And COMT is an enzyme that breaks down dopamine in the brain. And so depending on which version of the enzyme you have 3 to 4 times more dopamine in your brain in key areas than other people, if you will.
So this gene has to do with how we release things like dopamine, though, right? Have I got that right?
The protein that this gene encodes breaks down dopamine. And in some people, it works better. So it breaks down dopamine more efficiently, so they have less dopamine in their brain.
So there is this COMT that breaks down the dopamine. How does that then interact with the placebo?
Great. People have different types of COMT, if you will, different flavors of COMT. Some people have a really strong working COMT, and some people have a COMT that doesn't work so well. Mm. And the people whose COMT works very well, they break down dopamine really efficiently in their brain, so they have less available. The other groups of people, the COMT is less active. They have more dopamine available in their brain. And so we hypothesized that the people who had more dopamine in their brain might be the placebo responders in this particular trial.
Because there's more dopamine there for their happy thoughts to unleash when they think they're getting a real medication.
That's essentially the hypothesis.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, okay, a couple questions, and you know they've been asked of your study. That might be just the way the dopamine reacts to a certain kind of message, let's say pain. But that release of the dopamine by the thinking, will it necessarily work for depression?
That's a really good criticism of our paper in particular. And certainly there are several studies that have been done that have looked at the effects of other genes or other proteins, proteins that are involved in our endocannabinoids, which are homemade morphine, if you will, or that have looked at serotonin, which is involved in depression. And in all these studies, what people see is that there are other genes that could potentially affect an individual's placebo response.
Well, so this is the really good news if you're one of those people that has the right COMT. It's not so good news if you're not. I mean, what are you suggesting that we do with this information?
Well, firstly, we don't know if it's just COMT. It could be other genes. And so you might be a placebo responder for one type of condition, but not for another. And somebody who's not a placebo responder in one condition might be a placebo responder in another. I think that, you know, it's too early to say which mode is beneficial. So, for instance, if you're always a placebo responder, who's going to develop drugs for you?
But if you're always a placebo responder, you don't need the drugs.
We haven't gone that far.
Yeah.
Because we certainly don't know if you'll be always a placebo responder. So, for instance, if I had a predisposition to be a placebo responder, but I had really bad experiences with my physician, with the healthcare system, that might, quote unquote, color or affect my ability to mount a placebo response.
Yeah, cancel it out.
Yeah.
Well, others, including Arthur Kaplan, the terrific ethicist, are saying that this might, you know, this kind of turns clinical trials on their heads. I mean, if you're working with people who have a predisposition to react a certain way to a placebo, does that knock clinical trials out?
Well, there are several interesting questions that it raises for clinical trials. What happens if you have more placebo responders in your placebo arm than on your drug treatment arm? You might see that there's no difference between drug and placebo.
When, in fact, that only represents the people who have a good placebo response. It doesn't represent people who don't.
Right.
Yeah.
And then it gets even more complicated than that. If the placebo pathway involves dopamine, serotonin, and these are pathways that are targeted by drugs, what happens to the person who is taking the drug? Because remember, every time you take a drug, you're always having a placebo response, right?
Right.
So what if the drug is modifying your placebo response? Those are the issues that we think are going to be really important to address, and those are the issues that I think are going to be complicated to tease out.
That's Dr. Catherine Hall from the Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center in Boston. This is her new research about the genetics of the placebo effect, published recently in Trends in Molecular Medicine. In case you are not a subscriber, we're going to link it here at hereandnow.org. Doctor, thank you.
You're very welcome.